shepherds who would be the gatekeeper. And then in the morning, pretty early, around 4:30, the shepherd of each flock would go and there would be a mass of sheep. And the shepherd would call his sheep and they would know his voice. He didn't have to sort them out. They would come out of the fold and follow him. So Jesus in John chapter 9, verses 1 to 3 and 14 to 15. Very truly I tell you, Pharisees, anyone who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way, is a thief and a robber. The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him, because they know his voice. Verse 14, I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. Well, we're going to have a space mission. And it's your responsibility to choose who goes on it and what are their skills. Now, you're going to have an engineer. You're going to have a computer whiz. You're going to have a medic. Now, some of those people might have other abilities. They might be able to take photographs. You'd like to have photographs from a space mission, those stars and coming up to Mars and all the colours, wouldn't you? Now, it would be good if those, we can only send three, it would be good if one of those had another talent, which I'm going to suggest, and not one of you will guess. Now, you can think now. What is it? Anybody thought poet? Nobody. Nobody. A poet can see something and experience something and express it in such wonderful words, beautiful words. I mean, Bob Dylan did get the Nobel Prize for Literature, even though he hasn't acknowledged it. He's blowing in the wind, I expect. But the times, they are a-changing. But poetry is so important. A young fellow I knew, Daniel, he's going to be a missionary, by the way, so he's not all bad. I hate poetry. Daniel, but you listen to all these pop songs. Pop songs are just poetry set to music. Poetry is so expressive, more expressive than prose. It's wonderful. I know you agree. You know, almost one third of the Bible is in poetry. In the old days, the authorized version that I had when I was first a Christian, it was all solid writing. And it was a bit boring, the authorized version. And then our Bible class leader had a copy of the Revised Standard Version. And it was in poetry. The prophets were in poetry, marvelous poetry. And it expresses so much. And so wonderfully. And here we find that the book of Psalms is the great poetry book in the Bible. And that's what we're going to be looking at this morning, the 23rd Psalm. It's the 23rd of October, so I thought we'd have the 23rd Psalm. If you come tomorrow, we might look at the 24th. Now, I've got a warning for you. As you know, some of you know, I used to be a minister. And I have preached 14 sermons on this psalm. Each phrase, etc. So that's 7 hours. Now, that's the bad news. The good news is that I have brought it all down to a kind of trailer presentation. You know, you go to the movies and you see the trailer for the next movie, like the best bits, the funny bits, and so on. So this is the trailer version, and it only lasts an hour. All right. Okay. Now, background. I tried to tell you some background about John 10 when we read the passage from John's Gospel. Now, we don't know the background, really, to the 23rd Psalm. But in the 1870s, a fellow called Professor Kilpatrick, and then taken up in the 1970s by a man called Professor Blakelock, suggested a possible background to this psalm. And it's to be found in 2 Samuel chapters 13 to 17. I'll leave you to read that at another time. But David, who's the author of this psalm, he's expressing his life's journey, he's expressing his understanding of God in this intense form, which we call poetry or a psalm. And he's in danger of being usurped as king by his own son, Absalom. And he leaves Jerusalem and he travels through the desert, through a deep valley, over the Jordan, onto the other side. And it's thought that it's during that time, and some of the expressions in the psalm suggest this, that he wrote this psalm. And it's been 20 years since he's written a psalm, since his sin with Bathsheba, Psalm 51, etc. 20 years. So he's been going through an arid time in his life. And now he's going through a difficult time in his life. Praise God that we sometimes get closer to God when things are tough. And it seems to be like that for David. Now, I will tell you that this is all conjecture, but it's helpful to me to see that kind of picture. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Oh, sorry. I didn't bring it on as we did it. Okay. The Lord is my shepherd. Now notice, the word Lord is in capital letters. Now this is a principle that is followed by many of the modern English translations of the Bible. If you read the preface to your Bible, if you've got one, or the introduction, you will discover this. And it's talking about what is called the sacred tetragrammaton. These 4 letters, YHWH. We do not know how it's pronounced because the Hebrew text did not actually have vowels. They were put in some centuries later to help us to read it. But originally when it was written, it lacked vowels. And this is the sacred four letters that we say use as Yahweh. Now, if you went to a Jewish service and you could read Hebrew, and you picked up the Hebrew text of the service, as you read through the passages and you came to the word Yahweh, you would not say it. Because only once a year did the high priest in the holy place say the name Yahweh. It is sacred. Now, this practice probably only occurred after the time of Solomon. Prior to that, and David, of course, is writing, and you find lots of this in the Psalms, when they did say the word, they would say, Yahweh. They whispered. But then eventually they stopped saying it altogether, and it was retained for the Day of Atonement in the most holy place by the high priest, could say this word, and only once. So this is a tremendous thing. Now, Lord means God is great and magnificent and mighty and massive and stupendous. Now, that's what it means. That's the first word in this psalm. It's not thee, because thee does not occur in the text, in the Hebrew text. It's in English, but in the Hebrew, the first word is Yahweh, the great God. Now, Lord conveys the power and the magnificence of God. But it's not a perfect translation, because Yahweh is the personal name of God. So you have that mightiness of God in Lord, and that personality of God. And that's what the Christian faith is about. We are saying God is not some mighty, powerful figure, but he's a person. He has a name, Yahweh. And so that's a very powerful thing. So theologians, they have long words for things, you know. It's like every profession. They work up. I mean, there must be some little person working away, whatever profession it is. Let's find some long, complicated words and so on. But anyway, so theologians. Theologians talk about the transcendence of God, the mightiness of God. And that's embodied in this Lord Yahweh, the mightiest of God. And then David says, and once again, there are only two words here. The word is not there. And in Hebrew, it's shepherd. And there's a little thing on the end of the word shepherd, which means my. So basically, it's Lord, shepherd my. Theologians talk about the transcendence of God. Yahweh, Lord, mighty, powerful, and the immanence of God. So there is the otherness of God, the farness of God, and the nearness of God. Now, not many of us will have seen a shepherd this week. But for the people of the time, they would have seen a shepherd every day. So what David is saying is God is immediate. God is every day. God is my shepherd. The greatness of God. And that's our faith. Our faith is something that happens for us every day. It's not just what we're doing here in church on a Sunday. We come to honor him and to worship him. But daily we're aware of the mighty power of God and his immediacy. His presence close to us. You can see why it's going to be 7 hours. Now, throughout the psalm, you see that it is the shepherd who leads. Now, I actually was watching Landline yesterday, and there was this fellow with his sheep on a motorbike, and they're driving them off into another paddock. And that's what Australians have, isn't it? Motorbikes, quad pikes, helicopters. But that's not the case in Palestine. A shepherd has a small group of sheep, and he keeps them mostly for wool rather than meat, and has them for a period of several years, and even has pet names for them. I call them by name. And he leads them. He doesn't drive them. There's another half hour gone there. Now here's a powerful section. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. The relationship of the shepherd to the sheep was an amazing one. And David would have known this because he himself had been a shepherd and he experienced it in his life. And the shepherd cared daily for the sheep, knew each one their names. He would think about, now today, I want to take the sheep up onto these hills. Now I know that over there's some grass, but up there's better grass. And then they can feed there, and then I can move them onto that pasture. So the shepherd plans out the day and leads them to the best pastures. Now sheep don't like running water. I mean, if they fell in, their fleece would get waterlogged and they would drown. But the shepherd would go by the stream and dig out a section so the water came in and was still. So the sheep could drink in a peaceful and calm kind of way. Now we could go on and on and on and on about the care the shepherd has for the sheep. But that's 2 hours. But we've got to keep away and move on. I just want to point out to you, it's not just pastures, it's green pastures. It's that sweet grass. When I was, a kid, I used to eat grass. You'd pull out it and you'd eat that, those long stems, and inside there was the sweet stuff, and you could squeeze it out. And ah, there we are. You're in odd company. I love that expression in Peter, God's peculiar people. But then there's special sweet grass. And it is, it's quite okay, and so on. But it's the sweet grasses. And it's not just water, it's still water. And some people would translate fresh water. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Now I want you to imagine that you've come through this journey, through the psalm, and David is talking about his life experiences with God. And he's been conscious, first of all, how wonderful God is. What he does for us in his daily care. And now, the tone changes. And the tone changes in three ways. First of all, there's a mention of death. That is a subject that sometimes we don't like to talk about. Many years ago, I had a book called The Pornography of Death. And basically what it was talking about, and we don't see nowadays, I mean, you hear people, not people don't die, they pass. I mean, it's probably a good term, actually, because they're passing, presumably, a pass takes you from one area to another. So there must be a belief in the afterlife if somebody said, no, they've passed. But we use other language to take away the seriousness of death. Now, it does tell us it is the shadow of death. And in the original, it's probably like a veil of deep, death-like darkness. So it may not be speaking about death in it particularly, but the atmosphere of death. Now I will prophesy and say that every one of us this week has experienced a death. And you'll be thinking, oh no, nobody I know has died. But what about the death? You lose your job. There's the promotion you didn't get. There's a friend who's rejected you. These are all little deaths where there's a sadness comes upon us and a depression and a darkness. I can remember being a teenager, having a friend and they move away. There's a death. I can remember being a teenager, boyfriend, girlfriend, how painful it is. I don't want to go out with you anymore. It is a terrible and frightening thing. But that's the atmosphere. So we're in a new realm here, the realm of death, of disappointment, of a particular acute kind of sadness. So that's the first thing about this. The second thing about this is that the rhythm changes. Now, Hebrew poetry doesn't have rhyme, but it does have rhythm and what is called parallelism, which we won't talk about, but rhythm. And the first part of the psalm that we've looked at already is in the Kinah rhythm. 3-2. Da-da-da-da-da. And a lot of poetry is in rhythms, you see. I mean, this is the 400th anniversary of Shakespeare's death. And Shakespeare used the iambic pentameter. And the iambic means that there's unstressed, stressed, unstressed, stressed, unstressed, stressed. Sometimes he'll stress the first syllable because of a particular impact. Look where the dawn in russet mantle clad walks o'er the dew of yon high eastern hill. You get that rhythm. And people have said that appeals to us, not just for the beauty of the words, because of the rhythm, because it corresponds to our rhythm, our heartbeat. Da-da, da-da, da-da. It's the iambic. Da-da, da-da. Now the Kinah rhythm is da-da-da, da-da, da-da-da, da-da-da. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. It's expressive of emotion, expression of deep feelings and so on, but there's a sense there's a lightness to it. But when we come to, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, it's 2-2. Da-da, da-da. There's an added pace. Our heartbeat is more rapid. Because this is serious matter, folks. A very serious matter indeed. Now, the third thing is for you to think about. Because it's up there on the screen. The change in the psalm. That's what you're looking for. Now, don't tell me. But if you spot it, why don't you tell the person next to you? And then in a moment or so, I'll tell you what I'm thinking of. No, it might be something else, and that might be quite valid, but the thing I'm thinking of is the question. A clue? Martin Luther said, "The heart of religion lies in its personal pronouns. The heart of religion lies in its personal pronouns." Okay? The Lord is my shepherd. My is a personal pronoun. I shall not want personal pronoun. They're underlined. He maketh me lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness. Yea, though I walk through the valley of shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. A massive change. David has been talking about God. Now he's talking to God. Hands down, all those who got that. That's good. Now, this is one of the profound things about Christianity and our faith. You see, you can come to church and you can go to Bible study, you can go to theological college, you can be a minister, and you can know piles and piles and piles and piles of stuff about God. But you may not know God. And this is what this church is about, and what evangelical churches throughout the world is about, is that we don't just know about God, but we have a personal experience of God. Yahweh, my shepherd, is that combination, that coming together and thing. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. It's thought, Kilpatrick and Blakelock thought, that this journey from Jerusalem through over the Jordan would have taken David, and he had something like 1,000 people with him, through what is called the Wadi el-Nar, the Valley of Fire, which is a narrow valley that twists and turns. And shepherds going through, it's sort of one way. You go one way in the morning and you come one way in the back because it's so narrow. And it goes from what is called the pastures of David through to the pastures of Abraham. The cliffs are quite high and so on. Similar a little bit to that picture you see in there. Now, of course, the shepherd would lead the sheep. And we would be leading the sheep through the Wadi el-Nar, if it's that, or through this tortuous valley type of thing. And they would lose sight of him. Now, the shepherd had four basic items of equipment. One was a little bag called a scrip, in which he kept oil for the wounds of the sheep, and so on and so on. A sling, so he would swing and throw stones, so if a sheep was wandering off, the stone would fall in front of the sheep and it would come back, and it would use to against wild beasts, etc., like David did. And the two that are mentioned here are the staff. That's the long thing with the hook round. A sheep falls into a crevasse and the shepherd puts the thing down and hooks around the legs of the sheep and pulls it up. And so it's used in a variety of ways, and that's half an hour gone. But they also had the rod, which is a kind of club. which could be used for a variety of things and so on. And it's thought that as the shepherd went along this tortuous valley and the sheep came behind and couldn't see the shepherd would use his rod, his club, on the side of the valley. So the sheep heard the sound. They couldn't see the shepherd, but they knew he was there because of the sound of the rod on the valley wall. Now, I think that's wonderful because often we think, where is God? What an image. And whether it's there, I mean, this is a conjecture of one of the many writers on this psalm. But I think it speaks to me. And it has a truth about life experience, doesn't it? We don't see. We can't see it clearly. But there is a whisper. There is a hint of God's presence and God's leading and guiding. Well, we're getting to the end, as you're probably aware. There was a father who took his son to hear a sermon on the 23rd Psalm. And as they were going home, he asked his son, well, what did you think of that? I don't know if George is going to do that. But the son said, oh, it was all right, but I was wondering, where are the sheepdogs? And then at the end, there was the name of the sheepdogs. And the father said, what do you mean the name of the sheepdogs? What were they? Someone mentioned it already, I think. In my deafness, I could still hear it. Goodness and mercy. Now that is so good. We have a little dog, and when it says goodness and mercy shall follow me, there are people who study the originalities of words and so on, and one fellow came up and thought, and quite seriously suggested that the word follow is rather like dog my footsteps. Now, we have a little dog, and particularly when it was little, you'd be at the sink, and you've got to turn, go backwards, haven't you? You go backwards, and you're trodden on the dog. Now, the odd thing is, I was practicing this yesterday, and I was at the sink, and I went back, and our dog who was in another room came running back, and there was that, it was there, you know. So I must have dog language or something. But if you've got a dog, you know, they're there. They're there, come on up. There was a woman who wrote to a newspaper or something and complained about her dog because every time she went from one room to another, it followed her. But this is it. Dog, your footsteps. Come closely. Surely goodness and mercy will dog our footsteps. One of the church fathers in the early days of the church spoke about Jesus as nearer than hands and feet, closer than breathing. And this is so true. And David experiences this. Well, the Lord is my shepherd. Is he yours? I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk, see, it's through the valley of death, I will fear no evil, for For thou art with me, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely, goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.